Okay, hello, I'm Charlie. I'm a compulsive overeater and a bulimic based in London in the UK. Really grateful to be here. Thank you so much. It's what is it now? 9:15 in the evening. And my little one woke me up at 5:30 this morning, so I just was praying my ass off that I'm able to say something useful to you in the next 20 minutes. Because yeah, I feel quite tired, but you know, sometimes you are enough. It turns out that's actually the lesson that keeps on presenting itself to me at the moment. Maybe I'll share more about that towards the end, but yeah, let's see. Anyway, so yes, my name's Charlie. I'm a compulsive overeater and a bulimic. I am 11 and a half years abstinent by the grace of God. But it really is a one day at a time program. I came to OA. I was nearly a year sober in AA. I won't share about that program any more than to say that. But I was about halfway through my step nines in that program, and I phoned my sponsor in tears. I can remember it like it was yesterday. I was on my hands and knees on my bedroom in this really gross flat that I lived in North London at the time. I can remember the really skanky carpet. And I phoned my sponsor and I said, I can't stop with the food. And like in between sobbing. And they said the most amazing thing, which in hindsight I think has saved my life. They said, I don't know what to do. I'm going to ring my sponsor and call you back. And I think that was my first lesson in good sponsorship, really. That person did not have the relevant experience, strength, or hope to share. And if they had tried to wing it, give me their opinion, some diet advice, they honestly might have killed me. They had the humility in that moment to say, I don't know what to do, and to pass me on to someone who does. And that person then became my sponsor. And I went to a meeting the next day and I hated it. I sweated all the way through the meeting. I think my ego was just pouring out of my armpits. I just was so uncomfortable listening to people talking about the foods. Because I've been a compulsive eater, I think my whole life really. My first word as a baby was more, which is a real addict sign, I think. Yeah, I've always been funky with food, shall we say. It was my best friend, it was my comforter. And then I discovered bulimia at a very young age. That was my secret and my kind of power. And gave me a sense of control. So yeah, it was deeply uncomfortable for me to listen to people sharing so honestly about the food, about this stuff that I had kept so secret for so long and felt so much shame about. And then also for them to share really positively about the solution that they were living in. Yeah, I just hated it. I hated you all for quite a long time. But I was desperate enough to work the steps. And I worked the steps via the AA Big Book. I read all of the OA literature and I read all of the ABA literature alongside that. But really, it was the AA Big Book that has saved and changed my life. I wanted to read a bit from the doctor's opinion because I think this perfectly sums up my disease and also the solution. So this is XXIV, the doctor's opinion. Men and women drink, or in my case, men and women compulsively eat because they like the effect produced by food. So yeah, I'm a kind of well-rounded nutter with food, which allows me to be of service to a wide range of people. I've got a long history of restriction, crazy diets, over-exercising. Also purging and laxatives, also overeating, binging until I'm completely obliterated on the sofa, and unable to move. And I thought the solution for each one was just the other one, you know. And I was doing it all for the effect. I didn't know that at the time, but I was doing it to change the way that I felt. The sensation is so elusive that while they admit it is injurious, they cannot, after a time, differentiate the true from the false. Yeah, I knew it wasn't healthy. I knew it was injurious. I knew it was shameful. I knew to keep it a secret, but I couldn't, after a time, differentiate the true from the false. To them, their compulsive eating life seems the only normal one. Yeah, I mean, I'd started this from such a young age. I really didn't know how to eat, and it was part of the anger and the humiliation of getting abstinent in OA was learning how to eat. I remember sitting in front of a plate of food just baffled, like, is that the right ingredient? Is that the right portion size? Like, is that too much? Is that not enough? Like, feeling too old to be learning something so basic. They are, here we go, this is the good bit. They are restless, irritable, and discontented, unless they can again experience the sense of ease and comfort, which comes at once by taking a few bites or skipping a few bites. Bites they see others taking or skipping with impunity. Yeah, my wife is a normal eater, which is very strange to watch. And sometimes she, if she's feeling restless, irritable, or discontented, and she's looking for ease and comfort, she might go and buy herself an item of food that has no nutritional value, that's purely for ease and comfort, purely for enjoyment. And she's able to do that safely. And sometimes she does really weird things, like eats half of it and then puts the rest in the fridge. And then it's just there for days. And every time I open the fridge, I go, there it is. More proof that I'm a compulsive eater. Because that's just never been my experience. So yeah, with impunity, her sister's getting married, when's that? End of September. And she's got this dress that's just a little bit too tight. And so she's kind of very gently put herself on a diet at the moment. And she's kind of going swimming a bit more. And it's all very sane and normal because she can just do that. Like, she can just sanely diet. And I cannot. Yeah, I just cannot get my ease and comfort that way. And I realized by doing inventory that not only was I looking for ease and comfort, I was looking for a deep spiritual sense of safety, love, value, identity, purpose. Like, these are that soul work. I'm looking for deep internal soul connection stuff from stuff in the fridge. God's not in the fridge, or God's not in the gym, or God's not in the mirror. Like, it wasn't mere vanity when I was crazing myself to like get hench in the gym, or like I have to have a six pack, or I have to look a certain way, I have to be this certain number on the scales. Like, all the body image fear, it wasn't just a kind of like vanity, it was like driven by this deep need to feel safe in the world and to feel of value. And that is some wonky thinking right there. Like, I needed to wake up to the fact that I'm a spirit. My sponsor says this thing VIP all the time, value, identity, purpose. My true value is infinite, simply by dint of being. I really experienced that when my daughter was born. I just loved her instantly, and she did nothing to deserve it. She was actually quite annoying. The birth was quite dramatic. I won't go into it, but her, like, she was really challenging as a human being to arrive in the world. And anyone who's had a newborn knows how difficult they are. But the love that we all felt for her was just instant and infinite, simply by dint of being. And maybe that's how our higher powers see all of us. I had such a trippy experience actually after she was born. I was walking through where I live and I just was going to a meeting, and I was looking at everyone's faces like, oh, you were a baby once. Just like, whoa, like kind of tripping out looking at people. So yeah, that's value, identity. My identity is child of God, nothing else. It's not my relationship status or my weight. It's not my job title, it's not any of the material capitalist things. Like, just child of God, I'm enough. And my purpose is, I suppose, to be a clear channel for God's love, to practice step three. My purpose is not to prove to you that I deserve to be here or, any of the other things. The ego is relentless, it's so loud. And whenever I'm emotionally disturbed, I've forgotten my true value, identity, and purpose. It's this new thing my sponsor keeps saying at the moment, and it's really helping me. I've just started a new job, and the worldly clamours get loud again. And I can start looking for ease and comfort. Thank God, not in food, but recently it's like, oh, my colleague smiled at me yesterday and they didn't smile at me today. And, oh, I got a compliment for that last week and I didn't get a compliment for that this week. Like, oh, it's just exhausting. Having to ground myself in God, just remember that I'm safe. Even if I make mistakes in public at work, like I'm safe because of my true value, identity, and purpose. It's not in performing for other people. Anyway, so ease and comfort, which comes at once by taking a few drinks or bites or skipping a few bites with impunity. After they have succumbed to the desire again, as so many do, and the phenomenon of craving develops, they pass through the well-known stages of a spree, emerging remorseful with a firm resolution not to eat that thing or skip that thing or exercise in that way. This is repeated over and over, and unless this person can experience an entire psychic change, there's very little hope of his recovery. So what the 12 steps have done for me really is they've help me look at why am I restless, irritable, and discontented in the first place? Like, what's the shit FM that's blaring loudly in my head, that radio station that's telling me that I'm not worthy of love? Like, step four was particularly helpful there, and step 11. And they've also given me a way of accessing ease and comfort. I think I thought the solution for a while when I was new was to just never need ease and comfort, to just be like really tough all the time, and to like just that maybe spirituality meant like that you never feel sad or you never feel angry or it's just not been my experience. And neither would I want it to be. Like, I want to feel all of my feelings, safely. They're certainly not in the driving seat all the time, but yeah, sometimes I need ease and comfort. It's just that I can't go to food for it anymore. Like, God's not in the fridge. So I need to find a new way. If I'm not able to compulsively eat anymore, I need a substitute for what food almost gave me. If I'm not able to restrict and overexercise and go on crazy diets anymore, if I'm gonna have to eat like a normal person, then I'm gonna need something else to make me feel safer in the world, because I put the food down and suddenly I was just terrified of being a human in the world, and I needed some spiritual connection to something, some type of God to make me feel safe. And that's what the 12 steps have done for me. I need a really big God. And I also need some ancient spiritual wisdom to follow, rather than my wonky thinking, that my thinking is not to be trusted. I had to completely surrender my opinion on what I think I look like. That's a luxury that I've abused, that's gone. I no longer get to have an opinion. As part of my step nine to my physical body, I no longer get to chat shit about how I look anymore. I stubbornly practice gratitude and service for my body. My every day I have to surrender to the fact that my thinking around food and body image and exercise is distorted and it will never be trusted. I just can't trust it. And instead I need to surrender my thinking over to the care of a loving higher power. And check that in with, a responsible adult, usually my sponsor. I was just reading yesterday, in We Agnostics, there's this bit where it goes, they flatly declare that since they've come to believe in a power greater than themselves, to take a certain attitude toward that power and to do certain simple things, there's been a revolutionary change in their way of living and thinking. Yeah, like I can testify to that. It's sorry to swear, but it's a fucking revolution that has happened in my life. Like, I used to hate myself like it was a full-time job. It was so violent, the hatred towards myself, and the way that I harmed myself physically, verbally, emotionally, spiritually. It was dark. Without this program, I am just stuck in a bedroom with the curtain shut, binging and purging into plastic bags, doing sit-ups until I pass out. Like, it gets really dark really quickly. I'm not able to connect with anyone. I'm not able to love or be loved. I'm not able to enjoy physical exercise or be physically intimate with anyone or have an imagination or have any creativity or be present in the world or look at the trees and actually see them. Like, I'm just so stuck thinking about food and body image all the time. It's a full-time 24/7 mental obsession, addiction, that makes my life really tiny. And by the grace of this program, my life is huge. Like, I do a job that I love. I have access to creativity. I'm married to a beautiful woman who's both sexy and kind. I didn't know that could exist in a human. I've spent a long time dating nutters and behaving like a nutter, and she's really gorgeous inside and out. And we've got a 2-year-old now, learning to be a dad in recovery. And I can see my time. I haven't got long left. I'll just share that I had yet another step one experience in the last 18 months. So how old's my daughter now? Yeah, two. She was 2 in April, so she's 2 in a bit. And when she was born, she's never been an easy sleeper, let's say that. And she's still not now, to be honest. She's such a special human being. Like, I know that I'm biased, but she's a magic little kid. But she's also really intense. Anyway, when she was born, I just started suddenly increasing my caffeine, and I was just really, and I knew it was an issue. But I tried to use my willpower, and I tried to use my self-knowledge. Even over a decade in OA, I went straight to willpower and self-knowledge, and I thought, oh, this will be all right. I'll just stop, or I'll just cut down, or I'll just. And it went on and on and on. I spoke to my sponsor about it, did inventory about it, prayed about it, but finally I got on my knees and fully surrendered it. And it was removed. As I say that, I know I sound mental, like it was the maddest thing, but I have experienced that.
2 minutes, Charlie.
Thank you. I have experienced that in AA and then in OA. And in OA, I've experienced many surrenders of certain food ingredients or certain food behaviors or exercise a couple of years in. And, there's been so many, but this recent one around the caffeine has just been like remarkable. That when I finally was willing to have God remove it, it was removed. And the peace and the grace that is there now, in the space, it's like suddenly there's space. I'm still reeling from it, and it's been a few months now. And I'm reeling from the ease of it as well. Like, it's felt so, I don't know, I was really battling with it, and then suddenly it was just whew. If you're new and that's annoying to listen to, I apologize. Because when you're stuck in the battle and someone's like, just surrender to God, you're like, I would if I could. sorry if that's irritating, but my experience is this stuff really works. The 12 steps really work. The big book is where the solution is for me. I'm so happy to be at a big book meeting. I was really scared of the God thing, like so many people are, but prayer is vital for me in OA, absolutely vital. Step 10s, as written on page 84, throughout the day, absolutely vital. And a shit ton of service. I have to do a lot of service in OA if I want to be free. That is the rent that I pay on my freedom, and I pay it happily most days. It doesn't feel like a chore. It feels like a blessing. Yeah, I'll leave it there. Thank you for the opportunity to share. I'm very grateful to be here and grateful